Hello, everybody. Please allow myself to introduce myself. I am your host, Captain Marvelous, and this is the 34th episode of I'm Batman, the podcast, the show where I chronologically review each and every episode of the 1992 Batman the Animated Series. Let's get to it. This week's episode is titled I Am the Night. Original air date is November 9, 1992. The title card is a silhouette of a male body lying motionless on the ground. It actually looks pretty cool and haunting, setting the mood for this episode. We start off in the Batcave, and the old film here, it really works as we see the grain of the film, and the colors are a bit hazy, giving it an old-time classic noir film feel. Batman is sitting in the Batcave thinking about something when Alfred approaches him. Batman says he's tired, but it's not his body, it's his spirit that's been broken. Batman reads a newspaper and the headline is about the Penguin being let free from prison due to a technicality. Batman wonders if he's doing any good out there, and he feels he's won a few battles, but the war is never going to stop. Batman asks Alfred for something, and Alfred hands Batman a package, and Batman leaves. We cut to a young man on the street. He approaches some businessmen and asks for spare change for the bus, and the men give it to him. We cut to Bullock and Gordon, along with Gotham police, hiding behind cars, ready to start a raid and take down some sort of drug deal. Bullock wants to rush in now, but Gordon wants to wait for Batman because Batman was the one who got them the information to bust the criminal known as the Jazz Man. The kid from earlier walks by a store where a mom is buying a kid a Batman costume. There's even a bat bar inside, and at first I thought this meant it was some sort of ice cream bar, but I noticed the store is open 24 hours, so maybe it is an alcohol bar. So they sell all sorts of Batman stuff here, from comics to hats, puzzles, statues, and more. And this is very odd because it seems this is a store that deals exclusively in Batman merchandise. It's all fine, but remember, Batman is looked at as a vigilante, not a hero. Let's say that the world of the 1993 film Falling Down was real. It would be like if some nutcase opened a 24-hour store dedicated to selling merchandise based on the Michael Douglas character and then marketed the items to children. So it's all just very, very odd. Leslie Tompkins meets Batman in Crime Alley, and Batman wonders if he should give up his cause and lead a normal life. And then they have this exchange.
Santayana says that those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it.
He also said a fanatic is someone who redoubles his efforts while losing sight of his goal.
Batman kneels down, and he takes out the package that Alfred handed him. He opens the package and it's two roses. He takes them out and places them on the ground. The young kid from earlier is walking down the same street when he is assaulted by two men. Geez, who would have thought that someone would get mugged in a place called Crime Alley? The two men call the kid Wizard, so I guess that's his name, and they tell him that he owes them money for letting him work that corner. The kid tries to weasel his way out of this, but he can't. The two men start beating him up, and one of them pulls out brass knuckles. Batman stops them, and he punches one of them, the other one runs away. Batman trips him up with a bola, and then the kid, or Wizard, I guess, he isn't grateful at all, telling Batman he didn't need help from some jerk in long underwear. Batman notices that the man he tripped up fell and crushed the roses that he had set up to his dead parents. And Batman's face just gets really, really angry. Batman stops the kid from leaving and he hands him over to Leslie Tompkins, telling her to take the kid to the homeless shelter. Back at the police raid, and Bullock knows they have to strike now. The cops move in, but Jazzman and his gang are waiting and they respond with gunfire. A huge gunfight ensues. Leslie is at the shelter with Batman and tells him to go home, but Batman says he has promises to keep. Back at the gunfight, and the police are being held back by the criminals. A police helicopter is shot down and it blows up, with the explosion revealing Batman's silhouette. It is a really, really cool moment and reveal. Too bad that those policemen had to die so that Batman could make his cool entrance. Gordon mentions to Bullock that this was a setup and that Jazzman knew they were coming for him. We see the Jazzman inside, and he seems to be this Asian mobster. He pulls out a machine gun from a guitar case and he makes music puns about killing Gordon. Batman runs along the side of the building and he throws gas grenades into the criminal's hideout. Bullock sees Batman on the roof of the building. Jazzman tries to escape on a truck, but Batman stops him by jumping on the truck and using a grapple and chain to hook the truck to a post and causing it to crash. Bullock and the police move in and arrest Jazzman. Bullock wonders where Gordon is, and we see Gordon lying motionless on the sidewalk, just like the silhouette from the title card. Bullock is shocked, and Batman is horrified. Gordon is taken to the hospital where doctors operate on him. We see a report from Summer Gleason about Gordon being shot and the Jazzman being sent to prison. Batman breaks into Gordon's room to see how he is doing, and Gordon is in a bed with tubes all over him to help him breathe. Batman blames himself for this, and we get our first appearance of Barbara Gordon, the commissioner's young daughter. She talks to Batman, and I really like that it's established that he knows her already and he has spoken to her before. We don't need introductions, and to me that adds a feeling of realism, because if the friendship between Gordon and Batman is as strong and as lasting as we are led to believe, then it's to be assumed that Batman knows Gordon's family.
I don't know if you can hear me, Jim. I'm sorry. If I hadn't stopped in Crime Alley.
Batman.
How is he?
Not good.
It's my fault. Should have gotten there first. Checked it out before.
Don't blame yourself. You caught the man who shot him.
If I'd been there.
Bullock bursts in, and he blames Batman for all of this. He feels Batman should be the one in the hospital, not Gordon, because Batman gave him faulty information.
You should have been there, pointy ears. Then maybe Pete might have shot the right guy. I thought you were supposed to know what's shaking on the streets. How come you didn't tell us this was a setup?
I didn't know.
Yeah? In my book, that makes you just as responsible for him being here as the Jazzman.
Harvey, please, it wasn't his fault.
Now, Bullock is a tough character to like. He's loud, he's brash, but he is loyal and I would say honorable, at least through his own code of ethics, because he knows where he stands, he knows where his loyalties are, and they are with Gordon.
Hey, where you going? This ain't over yet, outlaw! You hear me? You're going down for this! I ain't talking law! I'm talking you and me!
Batman is back in the Batcave and he loses his mind. He destroys a lot of machinery in his Batcave in a fit of rage and just falls down on his knees and lets out a scream of anger like we have never actually heard before from Batman. This scene to me just holds a lot of power because we never see Batman show what he's feeling. He's always just quiet and just looks confident into what he does. We never know what angers him or what gets to him. He just tries to bottle it all in, but finally it's just too much and he has to let it all loose. It also reminds me a lot of the scene in Beware the Grey Ghost where Simon Trent loses his mind over his life falling apart and he starts destroying his apartment. So I really do like that we are finally getting to see what actually goes on inside Batman's head, what he's feeling, as usually he's just the character that we all want to be like. We admire him because he's this tough, cool, composed person, but it shows that he's just as human as the rest of us. Jazzman is in court, and the judge is Judge Vargas, who we last saw in the episode The Strange Case of Bruce Wayne. She was the woman being blackmailed for starting the Gotham dock fires when she was a little girl. Jazzman gets sent to Stonegate while awaiting trial. And Jazzman wants to escape so that he can go kill Gordon. So he talks to someone who we have seen before, and it's Spider Conway, the thug that Killer Croc had kidnapped in the episode Vendetta. I'm liking this little world building here we have going. Jazzman wants to kill Gordon because Gordon arrested him 6 years ago, so that's his reason for wanting to kill him. We're at Wayne Manor, and Dick Grayson arrives at the behest of Alfred. And Alfred is worried because Batman has been depressed and he has not left the Batcave for 3 days. Dick arrives and he tries to calm Batman. And Batman and Robin just have a great, great exchange.
Bruce, you stay down here much longer, you'll be growing mushrooms in your armpits.
I should have been there.
You can't be everywhere.
I let him down.
You're being too hard on yourself.
He's a friend. More than a friend. Jim Gordon's the same age my father would have been if he hadn't. Now he's hanging by a thread. If I'd gotten there 5 minutes sooner.
You're only human. You do all one man can do. More than any man's expected to do.
I know that was long, but the acting in this episode is just amazing, and it shows the talents of everyone. Every single character here gets to show their human side and emotions. We get to find out something that has never really been explored before. Batman sees Gordon as a father figure. We always get the friendship, the camaraderie, partnership between Gordon and Batman, but we never really know how Batman feels, as I mentioned before. He's very closed up, and in this episode, he's just letting everything out. It never really occurred to me that Gordon would be Batman's father figure, as I always saw them more as partners if in fighting crime, but I mean, it makes sense. Gordon is the same age his father would have been, so it's somebody that Batman looks up to, somebody that Batman wants to be like, and somebody whose approval Batman needs. It's really great. I really love the character exploration in this. I mean, as I mentioned, it's approval that he seeks because Batman does a lot of what he does, not only to protect the city and honor the promise he made to his parents, but as I said, it's a way to make Gordon feel proud and make Batman feel that his father, which is who he's putting it, Gordon in that role, is proud of what he's doing. It's that approval that he needs.
This life. I used the night. I became the night. Sooner or later, I'll go down. It might be the Joker, or Two-Face, or just some punk who gets lucky. My decision. No regrets. But I can't let anyone else pay for my mistakes.
Jim Gordon's a cop, Bruce. He knows the risks.
How long before I let someone else I care about down? Leslie. Alfred. You.
Batman just puts enormous pressure on himself. Robin has a point. And Batman has to understand that he can't take care of everyone and that everyone has a mind of their own to make their own decisions and accept the consequences. This shows how Batman feels the need to always be in control. We have talked about this before on the show, especially in the episode It's Never Too Late. Batman feels he always has to be a step ahead of everyone, and it always feels like he's just manipulating people to do what he wants them to do. But maybe it isn't about him wanting to be in control for the need of power to feel like a puppet master. Maybe it's because making people do what he wants, he feels that he knows in the position they will be in, and he can determine whether they will be in danger or not. And if there is danger, he feels he's in control to save them from it. Or he's probably just an ass who's going to break the mind of an old man and make him think he's an actual superhero, but what do I know? Jazzman escapes prison via the old cartoon trope of hiding in the laundry and sneaking out a sewer. It's actually very anticlimactic. So Batman and Robin keep talking. Batman feels he's a cliche.
When all is said and done, how much good have I accomplished? They sell t-shirts of me. I've become a cliche, more good for the tourist trade than the streets.
This city would fall apart without you.
Maybe, maybe not. When you look too long into the abyss looks back through you. Maybe it's time for Batman to return to the night that spawned him, before anyone else gets hurt.
Now, if you're getting tired of all these clips, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm sure you would rather hear this great acting, this great voice acting and emotion, than just me talking about it. Batman takes off his mask and he throws it to a bottomless pit that in his Batcave. Dick Grayson is now at the hospital with Barbara and Jim Gordon, and he's reading a newspaper about Jazzman's escape. Barbara is worried because Jazzman is insane and she just feels helpless. Back at Wayne Manor, and Bruce Wayne is reading some papers. Robin is trying to convince him to go after Jazzman, but Bruce is just ignoring him. Robin says that Bruce taught him everything about crime fighting, but the most important lesson was to never give up. Bruce keeps ignoring Robin, and Robin leaves. Robin is about to get on his motorcycle, but Batman stops him, saying, "This is my hunt." Batman is back on the streets and looking for Jazzman. Bullock is also out looking for Jazzman, and he hears of the suspects being sighted near the corner of Adams and O'Neill. Now, the name of the streets was a subtle nod to writer Denny O'Neill and artist Neil Adams, both of whom I have spoken about before on this show. They were the team who brought DC Comics back to some seriousness after all the silly stuff from the 50s and 60s. Jazzman reaches the hospital and knocks out a window cleaner to take his place and reach Gordon's room. Barbara leaves the room to get coffee, and Jazzman reaches the window of Gordon's room via the window cleaner's scaffold. Jazzman pulls out a gun, but Batman knocks the gun off Jazzman's hand, but it goes off, and it cuts one of the cables in the window cleaner scaffold. Both Batman and Jazzman struggle to hang on, and Batman and Jazzman swing through the window into Gordon's room. Barbara arrives, and she is shocked. Jazzman pulls out a gun, tries to shoot Gordon. Batman throws a shuriken, and it lodges on the barrel of the gun, causing it to explode in Jazzman's hand. Bullock runs into the room and he arrests Jazzman. Gordon wakes up, and we get what I believe to be one of the most touching and tear-jerking moments of this series.
Barbara?
Dad! You're all right!
The bus went down okay?
Yes. Get some rest now.
Gotta keep fighting. Never stop. What I try to live by. Maybe if I'd been younger, could have been like you. Always wanted to be a hero.
You are a hero, Jim.
That to me is just amazing. I mean, the man, Gordon, as we've been led to believe, is somebody who has given his life, has given up a sacrifice, a lot of family and life to clean up Gotham City, a city that many feel is just beyond reproach, beyond being able to be fixed. And he feels that that's not true. He fights for this, yet he still feels that he's not a hero. He feels he's just an everyman, just another person living in the city. And he feels that Batman is the hero. And I don't know, to me, that's just touching. Somebody, that's how noble Commissioner Gordon is. And to me, it's perfect. It's a great line. Just perfectly done. Batman swings back into the night, and we see the wizard kid from earlier hanging out at another bus stop. The kid picks up a suitcase, and Batman stops him, telling him to give the case back to its owner. The kid says that he is the owner, and he gives Batman this speech.
You know, I was kind of hoping I'd run into you. I've been in those places like where you left me before. Heard the rap, wasn't impressed. But this time it made sense. Maybe I was ready to hear it. So I'm heading back home. And I guess I kind of owe it to you, Batman. You probably saved my life. I bet you hear this all the time. Look, I'm going to miss my bus. I'll see you around. And thanks.
Batman gets a big smile on his face. And it's weird to see Batman smiling, but this time he's earned it. Finally, somebody has thanked him for what he's doing, so he knows he is making a difference out there. He swings to the rooftop of the skyscraper, and he proudly looks at Gotham City. The end. Alright, how about some after-show notes? Now, in the scene with the wizard asking for money, we see a poster in a building behind them. Now, the poster is of a robot carrying a woman, and the robot looks just like one of the mechanical monsters from the old Fleischer Brothers Superman cartoon. That's a classic cartoon. It's the one most people remember. So you'll know exactly what type of robot I'm talking about. It looks a lot like the Iron Giant, if you remember that movie. The voice of the wizard, the young kid, is done by Seth Green. He doesn't really sound like he does now on shows like Robot Chicken, but he was a lot younger back then. So maybe his voice just hadn't completely developed. But yeah, it's Seth Green. The voice of Batgirl was done by Melissa Gilbert, who some of our older listeners will know as the little girl from House on the Prairie. I thought that was very interesting. I never really looked it up before. I love the subtle world and character building, as I mentioned earlier. We saw characters from other episodes like Judge Vargas and Spider Conway. And it wasn't overt. They weren't just like hitting you over the head with it. Like, hey, look, here's the guy from the Killer Croc episode. No, they were just living there in their world. They were just characters living in this city. And as I said, I think this really just makes this city, everything just feel alive. The episode is so good. The animation is great. But the voice acting is the best that the show has had thus far. This episode shows why the actors were chosen. The casting director always said she wanted actors to play characters, not people who did cartoon voices. And this episode proves why she was right to do so. Now, I'm not going to just skim over the animation because it was really great animation. So as much as I give this show crap when the animation is bad, as I did last week, I will also give them credit when the animation is great. The episode here, the animation, it's really good. Maybe it's not the best we've seen, but it's really, really good. This studio has previously done the episode Pretty Poison, which was the debut of Poison Ivy, the Cat in the Claw Part 1, the very first episode of the series, which is actually another really well animation. They do a really, really good job on this one.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
All right, it's time for the Batcave Archives. The Batcave Archives is the list we make where we rank each episode that we reviewed thus far. This makes episode number 34. At number one, we have Beware the Gray Ghost. 2 weeks in a row it's been up there. Dethroned Heart of Ice, the Mr. Freeze origin story. At number 33, we have the episode Prophecy of Doom, the episode where Batman fights a fake psychic. Where would I rank this episode? I keep mentioning how this episode is a hidden gem. It's one episode that many people don't really give credit to. I've watched many YouTube shows where they rank the best episodes of Batman, the animated series, and this episode is never mentioned. So I think that this episode should get a lot more credit. It is really, really underrated. It goes overseen by a lot of people, and I feel it's really, really good. This episode is definitely a top 10 episode. So at number 10, we have Joker's Favor, the episode where Joker, where the man cuts off Joker in traffic and Joker cashes in his favor to take a bomb to City Hall. Dreams in Darkness, that's a Scarecrow episode. Feet of Clay, the Clayface origin. It's Never Too Late. That's the episode I spoke about earlier. That's the one with the priest and his brother who is a member of the mafia. And number six, Two-Face Part 2. The conclusion to the Two-Face story. At number five, Perchance to Dream. That's the episode where Bruce Wayne lives in the fantasy world where he has a perfect life. I don't think this episode is better than that one, but I do feel it's better than the Two-Face conclusion. So I'm just going to keep it simple, and this episode is going to be ranked at number 6. So our new number 6 is the episode I Am the Night. Remember, if you want to see the full list, you can go to our Facebook group. Look for I'm Batman the Podcast. Become part of the group, and I post the list. I update the list there every week. I post up pictures of the title cards every week. Be sure to join. It's a fun group. Lots of cool members there. Well, I think that's going to be it for this week's show. Next week, we will be doing Gotham Goes Hollywood, Episode 2. Now, the original gimmick for that was that I was going to review a different Batman movie on the last week of every month. Last month, we did the 1989 Batman, the Tim Burton movie. So, logic dictates, month 2, I should do Batman Returns. But you know what? I've changed it up. I feel that I think I'm going to review a movie that just falls into the geek genre, if you will. Maybe some superhero movie or monster movie like Godzilla, I don't know. But I think I'm going to do different types of movies just to keep it more fun. If there's a certain movie that fits a certain theme, like say October, Halloween, I might do a horror movie or maybe a superhero movie with a horror feel to it. So we'll see. This month, I still haven't chosen the movie. So what I'm going to do is actually I'm going to spin a wheel. We're going to spin a wheel for Gotham Goes Hollywood. I have some choices here. I believe I have about 12 choices. So I'm going to read them to you. We have Spawn, the movie from, I believe, 1998-99. We have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1990. We have the anime Ninja Scroll. We have Fantastic Four. That's Roger Corman's Fantastic Four. That is the infamous, badly made movie. I'm sure a lot of you have heard of it. We have the movie Elektra. That's one I actually haven't seen. I have the DVD, but I have not actually seen it. So that would be a surprise to all of us once I do that one. I have the movie Daredevil. That one, remember, with now Batman, Ben Affleck, playing the role of Daredevil. Superman Returns. We have the Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton. The animated feature Justice League New Frontier. The also animated feature Batman Gotham Knight. Not to be confused with the Batman Arkham Knight, which is a video game. We have Captain America, the 1990 version, so sorry all you Chris Evans fans. The movie The Phantom, and lastly, the movie Dick Tracy. So we're going to spin the wheel here and see what it's going to land on. Let's do this! Woo! Yeah! Spinning wheel, let's go! Alright! Yeah! Woo! Alright! And it spins, and yay, oh, yeah, and it spins, and oh my god, motherfucker, Elektra, the movie Elektra, it's the movie that we're going to be reviewing next week for Gotham Goes Hollywood, so... I guess we're going to see how fun that movie's going to be. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining me. And remember, if you have any questions, suggestions, or thoughts on the reviewed episodes or the show in general, send them to Captain_Marvelous1@yahoo.com. I've been your host, Captain Marvelous. And remember, no matter where you're from, no matter who you are, we are the night.
Lift me, won't you lift me above the old routine? Make it nice, play it clean, just.